Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. I'm Pat Iyer, and I have with me today Tim King, who is a legal nurse consultant with extensive experience located in the snowy section of New York, near Buffalo. Tim has been helping attorneys since 2012 by providing defense medical examination nurse observers. Some people know that as independent medical exams or insurance medical exams. We will be referring to it as DMEs, because if you know anything about this type of LNC practice, this is typically an exam that's ordered by the defense on a plaintiff who is claiming to be injured as a result of some trauma. Tim has just recently finished his 1,000th, I'm pronouncing that correctly, review. And I think we can learn some things from this guy who has mastered this aspect of LNC practice to the point that he now hires subcontractors to assist him in his business. Tim started his career as a police officer, got to visit a lot of emergency departments and peek around the curtains to figure out what the nurses were doing, and found that that was so appealing that he switched from being a police officer to becoming a registered nurse. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat, for having me. I'm very excited to be here. This is fun.
For those who are not familiar with defense medical examinations, and they may be people listening in any country of the world, this may not be a practice that everyone is familiar with. Let's start with, why do attorneys who are defending a case request a defense medical exam?
Well, the main reason is a lot of attorneys, majority of attorneys, they don't really trust the physician that is performing the exam. That's why they're called defense medical exams. These exams are defense attorney originated, and they pay that physician big money to perform this exam. And the plaintiff attorney really would like a medical professional that's on his team to be in that room and be his eyes and ears, and to elaborate on the contents of the exam.
What is the rationale behind having a medical person, such as a legal nurse consultant, be there as opposed to the attorney's paralegal or the attorney himself or herself?
I've sat in a lot of waiting rooms, and I've noticed paralegals that are waiting with their clients for exams. And the paralegals are not medical people. They're there because their employer told them. And one of the main benefits is with it, that nurse can testify to the elements of the exam, where the paralegal is not really medically trained at all. And the other part is, we really don't have an interest in the outcome. If a paralegal is ever bought in on the stand, that paralegal wants what's best for their employer, where a legal nurse consultant is independent, and their credibility is much higher versus one of the office staff members.
All right. Yes. We are definitely, as independent LNCs, not on the payroll.
Right.
I know that you started in your nursing career from being a police officer, and you are currently doing some shifts in the emergency department. And yet you were able to transition from being in a full-time ER nurse capacity to being an LNC. Tell us about that transition. What was that like?
That transition occurred over years. exciting working as an ER nurse. See all the traumas that come in, the disease processes. It was a great experience. But as most of your audience knows, clinical bedside nursing today is becoming a lot more difficult and overwhelming. I wanted a gradual way to reduce my clinical time. So that transition, I eventually went from 36 hours a week when the DME started, then I went to 24 hours a week. And I stuck with that for a while until my client base started to really build up. And I realized that I can get away from the bedside altogether and keep it as a per diem. So the transition, it wasn't hard, but it took a period of time.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't happen overnight, is what you're saying.
Not at all. Not at all. I subcontracted to a lot of my friends in that emergency room when I was there. I would get a DME request for a certain date and have a 12-hour shift. And I would talk to whoever was in the nurse's station with me. And they were all interested. And I would email the attorney back saying, my friend, you know, Betty Smith will attend this exam and provide a report. And they would say, fine. And so that's where a lot of my subcontractors, you know, came out of.
Mm-hmm. Let's take our viewer of this video who's watching this on our YouTube channel or listening on our audio platforms through the process. You get a letter from an attorney or an email or a phone call saying, Tim, can you attend the DME of Susie Smith, who is being examined by orthopedic surgeon John Jones, and gives you a date and time. What happens next?
And that process of, for me, begins with that email. I respond back that I'm able to attend. And then I ask for some paperwork that gives me history. It varies from state to state. It gives me a history on the accident. And I put it in my calendar. And then I call Susie Smith about a day or two prior. I tell her that, hi, I'm Tim Kane, and I will be at the IME with you as a witness on your behalf and write a report for your attorney. It's surprising how appreciative a lot of these clients are when they tell me that, because it's intimidating to them. And the fact that a nurse is going with them puts them a little more at ease. So I have that phone call with them, and then I explain the details of the IME. I might even go over some liability issues that the attorney wants, because the attorney will prep me on that if he or she so chooses. Then I meet them in the waiting room. We do the paperwork if it's decided that we're going to do it or not do it. And then the exam commences. We go into the exam. Exams are usually 45 minutes to an hour at the most. There are some different types of exams that last longer, but I can get into that later. And then once the exam's concluded, I have a little post-conversation with the patient and go home. I take out my notes. I write a detailed report of what occurred in the exam and send it to my attorney, send them an invoice, and they send me a check.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's easy. Yeah, it really is. And I average in the winter, it slows down a little bit. The summer months, I can get anywhere between 35 and 40 requests a month. The winter seems to cut that in half or a little more than, you know, I get about 25 to 30.
Wow. That is quite a volume. And what I heard you say, a couple of things I want to pull out of that is the duration of the IME or the DME, 45 minutes to an hour, is typical. I have spent as little as 7 minutes in an exam room with a physician and a patient, and yet the physician generates a 4-page report claiming to do some things that I know the physician didn't do in that 7 minutes. Has that happened to you?
I've had probably less than 10 times I've had attorneys call me personally and ask me to go in more detail about the exam and then say, you know, there's some conflicting evidence here and we may have to call you in for an affidavit or even testify on it. then I don't know what happens after, but that never really occurs. And I assume that that attorney says, I have a nurse to dispute some of these, that the physician says, and then the case settles. But I've had numerous times when an attorney will call me and want to know more on my opinion on what happened in that test and exam. But I've never testified in the 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And I do believe overall that's a pretty rare occurrence that an LNC needs to go into court to refute what a physician said. But the physicians who are savvy and do a lot of this, I believe, are aware that the nurse could be put in that position to contradict what the physician said he or she did during that exam. And on occasion, it's happened to me, the physician has said, oh, I don't want that nurse in the room with me, and you can't come in. Has that happened to you?
That's happened more times than I ever thought it would. And I just have a simple response to that, that this exam will be canceled and, my attorney client will just have to report back to the court. And every time I say that, then I'm always allowed in the exam. It varies in different states, but in New York State, the client has a right to have an observer. They can't deny me. They've tried numerous times. And that's my go-to response, and it always works. But I know that numerous times my presence has made them a little uncomfortable. But the other thing too is I really believe with what your point is on the physician aware that that nurse can refute what I'm doing is it increases that integrity of the exam. It makes them go the distance to be more accurate and honest because the nurse was there.
It reminds me of the research studies that I read when I was writing a lot about medication errors. The fact that there was an observer watching that nurse give medications meant that there was a higher probability that it would be done 100% correctly. And I think the patients get better exams, as you're saying, when somebody is watching the physician. What method do you use for taking notes or recording during the exam?
That's a very excellent question. I have a notebook that I'm taking notes, meticulously with. A lot of DME nurses can record and they will be doing audio recording of the exam. You have to be careful with state regulations on that. Some states are so all right with it, and some other states actually have statutes and laws against it. So what I tell a DME nurse that talks to me about recording, they say, yes, you can do that, but you have to make sure that it's okay in your state.
And you know what occurs to me, and I've never done an exam or went with a patient in an exam where recording was allowed. It just occurred to me that you could use a platform like otter.ai or sonics.ai where you can upload that recording and get a transcript that you can then proof and check with your notes. Well, that would be a good use of artificial intelligence.
It would save on time and effort, I think, for the DME nurse. A lot of my attorney clients have told me that, well, if you record, Tim, we'll never ask you for it. That's really just more for your assistants. We really would want your word on an affidavit. Because if an attorney, it's my understanding, if an attorney introduces a recording, that brings up a whole nother can of worms for both sides to fight about the authenticity of it. Was it legit? Was he really allowed to? Is he, there's things like that. Where if it just assists the report writing, I think that's a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Have you had situations where you've had to interrupt the physician or stop the physician from either asking specific questions or doing specific testing on the patient?
More times than I'd like to say, yes. There's a couple of physicians out there that are all about whoever hired them. Plaintiff attorneys, what makes them nervous about defense medical exams is they don't want their client involved in another deposition. the defense medical exam is not a deposition, but they don't want it to get turned into one. So they're concerned about the details of the accident and liability, you know, of the patient during the accident. I'm always told, Tim, that my clients are not allowed to speak about the accident, or they can speak about the accident, but it has to be very minimal details. I was rear-ended. I was sideswiped, period. Long story short, I had a physician one time. We're in a regular medical exam room, clients up on the exam table, and the liability questions start. One or two went by that weren't terrible, and then the physician says to the patient, "Can you draw what happened in the exam or in the accident on this exam paper?" And that's where I stood up. I said, "Dr. Smith, I'm sorry. Mrs. Jones, you know, has explicit instructions from her attorney that she's to keep details of the exam at a minimum, and we need to move on to more medical questions." That's the other thing that attorneys tell me. In the DME, anything medical is fair game. It's just that details of the accident were what gets them, you know, nervous and concerned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see that. Yeah, that could definitely be an issue. Tell us what you typically say to the patient when you're preparing them for what will happen. In other words, do you give them instructions about the purpose of the exam and what they should and shouldn't do? Or do all of your clients go over that with their clients beforehand?
That's another really good question, because I like to say attorneys are like doctors, or they all do the same thing, but they do it differently. I go over things with the client specifically, because a lot of times I'll meet clients and say, "I didn't even really know if anybody was coming, or I left them a voicemail." I mean, their communication is not always as clear with your attorney as they would think. So having said that, I go over the whole details of the exam, that basically this doctor is not here to treat you. Some people think that, you know, that aren't really aware of what's happening, wonder if this is a doctor that's to help them out. And I say, no, this is a doctor hired by the other side. And he's not going to offer you any treatment advice. His whole goal is to examine you and come up with an opinion for the other side that hopefully makes your case weaker. So I go over that. And then I go over the basic liability content, where if that attorney client told me that there's no liability to be discussed, I make sure that goes on. Or if it is, I review it with them again to be minimal. Like you were rear-ended while stopped, or you were sideswiped by another car. And they're allowed to ask if their body, you know, hit other areas inside the vehicle. But you'll get, sometimes docs will want to say, "How fast were you going? What time of day was it? Was it, you know, nighttime, such and such?" I've prepped people and they'll still say a lot too much, and I'll kind of raise my hand. They'll say, "You know, I worked overnight. I was coming home, you know, from my shift. My phone rang." And that's where I'll kind of give a little wave, and then they'll know to kind of, you know, I'll have a pre-set that you're saying too much.
I like that. Yes. A little hand signal to let the client know that that's the time to back off from that description.
Because even though they're prepped, people they're nervous in there, and people love to talk. They don't like to keep it, you know, at a minimum. I think that's hard for a lot of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not just confined to people in DMEs, Tim. Mm-hmm. There are situations, exactly, in life where we talk too much.
But then let's go to the opposite of that. I will tell them before we go in there too, is this is your time to speak how negatively this accident has had an impact on your life. "I can't play golf anymore. I can't jog anymore. I can't play with the grandkids anymore." That's all like good information that attorneys like clients to say, like, how, you know, prior to this accident, you know, my life was different.
Mm-hmm. I have also told patients, if you're being examined and it hurts you, to say something, because you may wince or moan, yes, but the physician may have his or her head turned and not pick up your reaction. So it doesn't help if you're quiet.
Yes, you're making me think of something else. I have one of my main partner at a firm told me that to instruct them to always verbalize pain, because in New York, again, if a patient says, ow, or that hurts, he is obligated to put that down. But a wince or, you know, a moan is not.
Isn't that interesting that someone in the legislature in New York thought this through to say that it has to be some type of a verbal utterance that the physician has to follow up on?
Yeah. And that's, again, where the nurse comes in handy, because that doc in that exam knows I'm putting that down, you know, that pain was verbalized versus not.
How long does it typically take you to write up your report afterwards?
Not long. I put it involved in one of my normal days off. I'll start one, you know, I mean, if I went from start to finish, probably 20 minutes to a half hour. And I'll do it with the TV on, sitting in a chair, the kids running around. There's a lot of elements that affect that, but a report shouldn't really be less than an hour to accomplish.
And have you noticed any correlation between the longer it is since you went through the DME, the harder it is to remember all the details?
Before we continue with the show, I'd like to share this special announcement with you.
Are you looking for an exciting conference to attend while earning continuing education units? Do you want to become a legal nurse consultant or expand your practice? I have the best conference for you to attend, and that is the LNC Success Conference, which will be held March 3 and 4, 2022. Patricia Iyer and I have collaborated together on 5 conferences thus far. This is our 5th, actually. And we are so excited about this conference because we have a theme, and it is called CRASH. We have a variety of experts and topics to address what happened in a motor vehicle accident, a motor vehicle accident that later became a medical malpractice case. You will be able to attend and participate and ask your questions and get your answers. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Kenyetta Christmas, and she has her MSN, RN, ACNP, BC, CLNC. She has been an acute care nurse practitioner, and her background includes trauma, cardiovascular, neuro, and medical surgical critical care. We are excited to have her with us as she is going to present on the critical care aspects of those involved in this motor vehicle accident. Welcome, Kenyetta.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm very excited to be part of your conference this time. I will be talking about several individuals from this crash who end up in the ICU. We will focus on some injuries that happened post, non-related to their crash, and one individual in particular ends up dead, not related to his injuries, leading to a malpractice case.
Now, I understand that the attendees will have the opportunity to ask their questions and participate during the time with all of the speakers and their presentations.
That is correct. You can ask the experts during the session.
We will have a presenter addressing mechanisms of injury. We have Kenyetta Christmas, who will address the critical care topics. We have an attorney who will address the liability issues. We have a respiratory therapist and myself who will talk about some of the malpractice issues and respiratory care. We are very excited about this. And, I think I forgot to mention mechanisms of injury. That speaker is actually going to be the one who kicks off the beginning of the conference on a wonderful note. And please join us March 3 and 4, 2022. We want you to see the link below, lnc.tips/March 2022 virtual. We look forward to seeing you.
Looking forward to it, Barbara.
Now let's return to the show.
Absolutely. And that's where the good note-taking takes place. I mean, I have a little cheat sheet that I use. And I also, the cheat sheets in a course that I teach other nurses about DMEs, but the more and more my DME career is going on, the more meticulous I have to be with my handwritten, just to jog in my memory.
Tell us about what aspect of this role for the legal nurse consultant you find most appealing.
Oh, the most appealing. Well, I still feel like I'm a nurse, even though I'm not in a clinical situation, but it's an excellent work-life balance. My Saturday, Sundays are to myself. I have more time with my children. I'm home at night for dinner. My 12-hour shifts in that emergency room were always from 10 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. And then I usually needed a day after to recover from that. I think our audience will relate to what I'm talking about. So the work-life balance is tremendous. I'm going to Miami in a week and a half to an attorney conference. And I didn't have to try to find a time off at work to get that covered, especially in this short staffing time. So work-life balance, along with still having a nursing function, in my opinion, is, I think, the best part.
And I know that what you're describing is going to appeal to our listener who has not considered adding DMEs to his or her practice or wants to add more. How would you advise the LNC get involved in this role if this is a new role for that person?
Well, I have a training course, that they could take for a one-time fee. And I like to mentor nurses for 6 months after that. A new LNC could just add that to their service. What I found for LNCs that attend DMEs, it can lead to a larger practice. A lot of my DME clients have me do their chronologies. They have me do their personal injury chronologies and say, Tim, I don't really need an opinion. We're going to trial on this fall case, and I just need all these records put in a chrono for me, and I do that for them. But I wouldn't have had that if I wasn't his DME nurse. So if an LNC was considering it, contact me, try my DME course, and go from there.
I think what you're stressing is that this opens the door for discussion with the attorney about more services. It opens the door for subcontracting for nurses who get more requests than they personally can fulfill. And it adds a value to the law practice, particularly in the fact that you are not on the payroll, as we talked about in the beginning. So you have more objectivity, you're more respected as an observer than if a paralegal went who may not have any medical training, and most of them don't. Can you offer any suggestions on the process of writing the report itself, the format? Because I think I've struggled when I've done these, do I write it as a verbatim, like he asked this and she said that, or do I write it as a summary of he asked her about the details of the accident and she described that she was rear-ended? I mean, how do you handle that part of it?
I like to describe my reports as narratives. I'm not a transcriptionist. I just pretty much, there are four paragraphs. I put an introductory paragraph and I stress that it's a history and physical. The next paragraph's a history and I put it as a narrative. I don't write the questions and what the answer. I will put, like, say the doctor wrote, what kind of treatments have you had since the accident? I will put that Mrs. Smith said her treatments from the accident were chiropractic, physical therapy, and massage therapy. And I will kind of hit all the points from there to just give all the details of the history. And then in the physical, I just put all the details of the physical. And it's pretty easy. And after your first couple of DMEs, you'll catch on that they're all going to be roughly the same. I also have a a template that my course offers with exams that will help a report writer.
You mentioned that some of the exams are 45 minutes to an hour, but there's another type that can last hours longer. What were you referring to?
Well, those are neuropsych exams. They're one of my favorites. Oh, the neuropsychological exams occur because a defense or a plaintiff said that this accident, this is more with slip and falls, has affected my cognitive ability. Someone, you know, came out of Walmart, slipped, hit their head, and now they'll say that my memory's impaired. I can't think as quick as I used to. My reading ability is diminished. I can't perform my job as well as I used to because of the accident to my neurological status. Those will go 6 to 7 hours and sometimes even in the next day. It's a normal history. And then you observe this client go through all sorts of psychological testing that's pretty strenuous. I'm not even the one being tested, and I think it's strenuous by the time it's over. Mm-hmm. So your job there is just really just be the observer of what kind of testing that they went through. And you can bill by the hour for that.
Now, I remember helping a woman with one of those who had been in an apartment building where there was a problem with the air conditioning and the temperature inside went very high, and she ended up with some brain damage from being exposed to this high heat. I think those were the details, but it's been probably 15 years since I was there. And I remember the neuropsych asking her to connect numbers in a sequence and repeat words, which even I had memorized by the time I left. I knew those words and in what order I should share them. And she was significantly impaired, but he gave no, he kept a complete poker face during all of this testing. And I ended up meeting him later at a National Speakers Association chapter meeting and saying, oh yeah, I remember meeting you when you did the exam on this woman. And he said, oh yeah, she was really screwed up. And I thought, oh, I guess you do have an opinion about your patients, but you kept very quiet about what you were observing, because I expected him to say either I don't remember her or make some non-committal comment instead of what he said to me.
Interesting. Yes. They'll do 8-digit numbers and say, repeat that back to me in sequential order. Or in reverse order, you know. I mean, I just like, whoa. And I write it all down, and because I'm in the corner, and then I'll tell the attorney how many they got right and what they got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if anyone asked me to subtract 7 from 100, I would probably flunk that about a third of the way through.
Seven's the one they use. They'll say, you know, start at 100 and start subtracting 7. Yes. Yeah, that's what they do. It's amazing to me. Yeah.
Terrible. I can spell world backwards. That's about it.
That's, yep.
Got that one down. Yep.
Yes, exactly. Funny.
Well, I know we have probably stimulated some curiosity on the part of our listener. How can they find out more about you and the services and courses that you offer?
I'm all over social media. On Facebook, it's Tim Kaine. Find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is, I think, LNC's best friend. I'm Timothy Kaine, RN, on LinkedIn. I also run a couple Legal Nurse Consulting Facebook groups. Just put it in the search bar, and at the top of the group has my website, medicallegalconnection.com. And that's me. And you can learn more about defense medical exam attendance, my course. If you are interested in taking my course, an email to me at timkaine@medicallegalconnection.com. I'll spell T-I-M-K-A-N-E at Medical Legal Connection is probably the best way to get a hold of me, and I will I'll respond.
All right. And just to emphasize, Tim's last name starts with a K and not a C. It's K-A-N-E. Tim's got one of those easy last names like I do that everyone is able to masterfully misspell. I guess you could misspell Cain with C-A-I-N also.
Yes. And when I was growing up, I would get that a lot. Yes.
Yeah. You've seen that a lot, it sounds like.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Tim. You have offered us so many tips about how an LLC can help an attorney and help a plaintiff with the defense medical exam process. We talked about preparing that person ahead of time, knowing that there are certain areas of questioning that the physician should not dip into, and that the plaintiff can stop that questioning, and you can stop that questioning. Absolutely. As a nurse observer. We talked about knowing the rules for recording in your state so that you are not stepping over the bounds by pulling out a phone to record an interview, for example. We also touched on using artificial intelligence as a way to easily create a transcript if you are allowed to do a recording, and that serves as a backup for your handwritten notes. Tim shared the importance of documenting that report as quickly as you can before your memory fades or you're staring at your notes saying, what did that mean? And a simple four-paragraph format for the report that will take the reader of this report through the process of understanding what happened in that exam. If you are turned away at the door, you can use Tim's magic phrase to make sure that that physician understands the implications of not allowing you at the exam, that you're canceling the exam. I have seen physicians call the defense attorney and say, there's this nurse here with this patient. Is she allowed to be here? And always the answer is yes, she's allowed to be there and you need to let her in. That's permitted under the court rules. I think that's more a question for neophyte physicians who are not skilled in doing defense medical exams.
It's the new guys a lot of times.
The new guys, yes. And we didn't touch on one thing that I wanted to be sure we emphasized, which is to let the plaintiff / patient know that they're being observed from the minute that they get out of their car to the minute that they slam their door at the end of the experience. There are people who look out the windows in that physician's office and observe if the patient is able to walk or not walk with assistance, or exactly. Are they just putting on a limp or using an assistive device inside the building, but they can skip and hop out to the parking lot or in from the parking lot without help.
One of my clients sends a letter prior to every DME, and that's always a paragraph advising them that the DME starts the minute they get out of the car. Someone's going to be watching until they leave.
Yes. And I do want to emphasize, even though I sounded a little flippant, that the vast majority of people who go through this experience are truly injured and they are not faking it. There are a few, and it's those few that give this whole thing this air of suspicion. Is this person really injured? Are they malingering? Are they exaggerating? Are they just trying to get money? It's that undercurrent that drives this process. Plus, physicians who earn a substantial amount of money working for insurance carriers doing these exams. I've seen a lot of retired orthopedic surgeons who are very happy to do IME exams because they don't have to stand in the operating room all day on their feet and do difficult, physically demanding work, but they can do exams. And as long as they are telling the insurance company what they want to hear, they have tons of work.
And they don't have to treat them. I mean, and you don't have to worry about their health insurance paying their bill. I mean, it's a win-win on a doctor's side for that.
One thing that catches up with them, and we didn't touch on this, Tim, is that the plaintiff attorneys, as the defense attorneys, is also true. They keep databases of deposition and trial testimony, and they share reports that DME doctors have written. So if the DME doctor has taken a template and just changed the name of the patient and filled in the blanks with the date and the time of the exam, and every report is the same, the plaintiff attorneys are sharing that information and in some cases have driven those doctors out of the DME business by confronting them with those obviously pre-written reports.
Reports, yeah. I know one that's really controversial that they'll send me to, and they call him a hired gun. And it's funny, his exams are always 10 minutes versus, you know, you go to another orthopedic, it'll be 30 and 40. I just know he's the most controversial in my Western New York area here, DME-wise.
Can you tell us a little bit more about him?
He has been, I've read and been told from other attorneys that he's been cross-examined pretty hard. And in fact, it's even in one hearing transcript that one year he made over $5 million doing DMEs. So what that'll do for any plaintiff attorney is just say you're simply a hired gun and you're just making millions of dollars at this. And why would we take your opinion as objectivity?
That is fascinating because I just saw a number, not for orthopedic surgeons, but the average salary for a physician, average income is about $200,000 to $250,000 a year. Obviously higher for specialties like orthopedics and neuro, but family practice, internal medicine, around that range. So if you say, well, even an orthopedic surgeon makes five times that, say $1 million, working in the OR all day on the feet, you know, at least 3 days a week doing surgery. Then, and you contrast that with $5 million, that's a whole different scale.
I think I even, how I found that out, it was through conversation with attorneys, but I Googled them too. And I think it's even on the internet how of a controversy he is in the DME world.
Mm. Yeah. And challenged enough, his credibility shaken enough, he becomes incrementally less attractive to the insurance companies who are hiring him to examine these patients.
Exactly.
I wouldn't want to lay down that kind of a written trail to my door.
No, and I've had the privilege, that's what I was trying to remember. I had the privilege of some attorneys will email each other about physicians and they'll include me. And I, about this person, that's where I saw that. And, you know, Bob at the one firm was talking to John at his friend at the other firm. And that was one of the conversations I saw in that as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Even though they're competition with each other, they're, you know, they're friends too. The plaintiff attorneys, they kind of stick together in that sense, which is great. Yeah.
They sure do. And they do share a lot of information about details as you're describing, as well as the legal nurse consultants they like to work with.
Right. Yeah. I'm your name gets out there. You want it to be positive because they do talk to each other.
Tim, we could probably talk for another hour on this topic.
Well, absolutely.
And we will not. Yes. We will let our listener go on to the next podcast or the next item on their agenda, or they finished their walk and they are recovering from walking rapidly, listening to my podcast or watching this on YouTube. We appreciate you, Tim, for all the wisdom you shared.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you to you who has been watching this or listening to this podcast. We will be back next week with a new podcast, new topic, new guest. Be sure to add a like or a comment if you're watching this on our YouTube channel at Legal Nurse Business, and stay tuned for the next show. This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I have with me Jenna Gaines, who is a doctorally prepared cardiac nurse practitioner, and we've been talking in her podcast about some of the nuances of diagnosis and treatment of MI and how a failure to diagnose or a delay in diagnosis can have significant impacts on the patient. Jenna, could you give our viewer or our listener just a couple of highlights of what we covered in your podcast?
Yeah, definitely. We covered a lot today. We discussed the definition of an MI, the diagnosis of an MI. We discussed the initial workup of an MI and what providers specifically should be investigating in the patient who presents to them with chest pain. We discussed the type of the acute coronary syndrome and the treatment for each of those. We discussed conditions that can mimic an MI and how this leads to delay in diagnosis of an MI or misdiagnosis of an MI. And finally, we discussed that atypical non-cardiac patient presentation that can lead to misdiagnosis of an MI.
As you can tell, we covered a lot in Jenna's podcast. Be sure to catch her show on Legal Nurse Podcast. You can get it directly from podcast.legalnursebusiness.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.